Welcome back, everyone. I'm Brad Wolverton, the host of this little show and a longtime college sports writer. One of my most clicked stories ever was a piece called The Myth of the Sports Scholarship, which followed the recruiting experience of an elite high school swimmer. Today, we'll hear from another highly recruited former high school athlete who also happens to be one of the smartest college athletes I've ever met. I first wrote about Parker Goyer more than a decade ago when she was a Duke University tennis player, but it wasn't the tennis I got to know her for. In fact, she wasn't even on scholarship for her tennis, even though she was once ranked among the top players in the United States and played number 6 singles at Duke in a sport that gives 8 full rides. I got to know Parker because of this really cool program she started to help college athletes travel abroad for a few weeks every summer. Pre-pandemic, over 300,000 U.S. college students study abroad every year, but the overwhelming majority of college athletes don't get that chance because of the year-round demands of their sports. Parker changed that for thousands of college athletes, expanding her Coach for College program from a small offering for ACC athletes to a program that attracted athletes from dozens of colleges. Her dream was to make Coach for College kind of like Teach for America, but instead of tapping recent college grads to teach inner-city U.S. students, she tapped college athletes to help needy students in Vietnam. Parker would go on to accomplish even bigger things, earning a prestigious Rhodes Scholarship to study at Oxford University, a PhD from Harvard, and, as if that's not enough brand-name schools for you, eventually landed a postdoctoral position at Stanford University, where she continues to do research. The coolest thing about all that may be that the research she's done to get those degrees was based on the real-life outcomes from the Coach for College program. With all the hours college athletes spend on their sports, some people assume they can't be serious students, too, but Parker Goyer will show you how that's possible. We'll also hear how she became a top nationally ranked junior tennis player while balancing serious studies, debated the merits of homeschooling and live-away academies versus going to regular school at home in Alabama, developed close relationships with high school teachers and college professors that helped her get into elite colleges and advance as high as she did academically, used her academic skills to make herself more marketable as a tennis player, and one time after another, from high school to her undergraduate years, all the way up to today, found ways to overcome the odds when people underestimated her. Even if your kid isn't aiming for Duke or Stanford, this interview is essential listening to understand how you can use academics to leverage bigger things for yourself. So let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Parker Goyer. So let's go back to your early teenage years. You were a top 10 nationally ranked junior player in the 14 and under age group in tennis, but you knew from a pretty early age that you wanted to balance your athletic career with strong academics. In fact, I think you told me once that your goal was to be number one in your high school class. What made you set that goal for yourself and what sacrifices did you have to make to achieve it?
I think it was probably about sixth grade where I started becoming very focused on academics. And I think also I was becoming more focused on tennis as opposed to other sports where I played more like basketball and softball. But I think it was more in ninth grade where they first published the class rankings. And first time they did, I was number one. And there was just something about wanting to pursue that goal that I wanted to try to maintain that all 4 years. I have a younger brother. He would always joke I have a repeat day because I would get up and sometimes if there was a test, I would study from 5 to 6. And then sometimes I would play tennis as well from 6 to 7. And then go to school from 8 to 2 or 3 and then play tennis for 2 or 3 hours and then do homework. And then that was it. And then sometimes it was hard because if I had to travel for a training or tournaments, I had to miss school. So then I had to make up that work. Like I remember there was one time I played in the Easter Bowl, which was in California. And I was like, I took a week off of school and had to learn a whole new math chapter on my own. So some of it was independent study, but also trying to have good relationships with teachers. So they were trying to help me out at the same time.
I can see where it was like a double day almost. People have 2-a-days in sports. They maybe train in the morning or do weights at some point and their sport, but you were doing 2-a-days, it sounds like, both academically and athletically, with early practice, early studying, then a day of studying and school. That's a lot. So did that kind of burn you out at any point?
Not really, because I'm someone that feels more burned out when I don't have a goal or purpose to pursue. So like when I feel like I'm pursuing something I'm really dedicated to and passionate about, it gives me a lot of energy. And especially when I can see the incremental progress, because even in tennis, you get used to not winning every match, but if you can see ways you're still improving in certain skills, or because I would always enjoy with tennis, like working on different types of shots. Like I liked, there's a tennis player named Martina Hingis who had a variety of shots that she would employ. So I loved working on like sliced backhand or drop shot. Or there was one time where I started out with a Western grip and I had to learn how to move my grip over to the left. And so I spent years working on like a new forehand. So I just love the kind of the learning process as well, not only the results.
Something you said there was really interesting. You're so competitive that you were a top 10 ranked player in the nation, and yet you were still excited about learning and getting better. And it's really hard sometimes for young players, especially in tennis, but in a lot of individual sports, where making changes actually impacts your ability to win. And you don't always necessarily see that there's a longer term kind of advantage to making those changes. How did you sacrifice those ranking points or whatever? And how were you still willing to make those changes to make yourself better in the long run?
Something I've studied recently is the growth mindset, which is often applied to intelligence, like believing that your intelligence can be increased with effort and good strategies. But I feel like I also applied that more broadly to my life. I'm an Alabama football fan. So like the coach Alabama talks about this process that his team follows. And it's really just trying to like take joy in that, because you can't always guarantee success in terms of, especially with tennis, where I was like playing so many matches, you're not going to win every match. And especially if you're trying to really challenge yourself, you're going to fail. You can't necessarily have your well-being depend on your wins and your losses. And I think that's what's great about sports, is you have to learn that really early in life. Whereas maybe some people, if they don't ever have those setbacks, they learn that much later and they're much less resilient to be able to deal with that.
You mentioned you grew up in Alabama, which I don't think was known as like a tennis powerhouse at that time. So you went other places to train at different academies. You went to New Orleans, you went to Atlanta. What was that experience like, and how did it shape your path to college?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say the Southeastern region is considered a powerhouse, but Alabama is less so. I was fortunate in that I lived in Birmingham, which was a major city. So there were like clinics I could attend, and I had coaches that I stayed with for several years. And I think they were the ones that introduced me to these other training camps or academies in Atlanta and New Orleans. So we would just go there on the weekends with a group of kids and sometimes go to the same tournaments. I think also you just get better by playing different tournaments. I remember in the 12s, they didn't have nationals at that point, but they had something called Challenge Cup. So I made it a goal to try to get in that. And so it was like only 13 people got to go. And so I think one year I finally made it. And so that was exciting. And it turned out some of those same players ended up being on my Duke tennis team several years later. So that was fun.
You talked about how you had to make trips and give up days of school and still be challenged to try to keep your number one ranking in school. How important do you think it is for young players now to give up traditional schooling to be able to play at the collegiate level or beyond in tennis?
I'm not sure. For me, I always thought it was risky, like, for example, to go to like a training academy and like Balotelli or something, because I always wanted to try to pursue academics equally or maybe more so than tennis, because as your own article points out, it's really hard to get scholarships, even if you're a really good player. You know, with tennis, they do give full scholarships, but I think at Duke they had 8 or something like that. But at the same time, I wanted to go to a place that was like a top 5 women's tennis program. And so I was trying to see if I could balance those to some extent. And so I do feel like it helped. They worked together as when I was in middle school and high school, trying to be good at both tennis and school. But it was interesting how in college I found myself having to more choose between the two. They were almost more competing visions. And so I had to learn how to leverage tennis in terms of the skills I had to do better in school, but I couldn't always pursue them simultaneously.
Growing up, what were some things that you did as a student that made you better and maybe more highly recruited as an athlete?
I think there's some parallels in terms of, I feel like I always had good relationships with teachers, and maybe that was helped along by knowing how to work with coaches. Like I knew how to cultivate and sustain those types of mentor relationships. So I feel like that really helps, because with college, you have to have teacher recommendations. And I think I had some really good ones with that. Like I had teachers that would really take an interest in me and try to, help me. Because even though I went to a good school in Alabama, it's still hard to get in the top like Ivy League type schools. And so it was really important to try to like nurture those relationships. And I think also just being an oldest child, I actually didn't know a lot about how the process worked. And my parents had both gone to University of Alabama. So they didn't necessarily know all the ins and outs of how to get into other types of schools. And so I have had to figure it out more through trial and error, I would say.
Tell us how you figured it out. Like, what were some of the things that you learned along that path?
I don't know that I did it the right way. Like, I remember, like, when I was applying, for some reason, like, the guidance counselor, like, told us the wrong deadline for the, I was applying to Harvard at the time. And so we were, like, trying to finish my application with, like, handwriting. And it was not the right way to do it. And whereas, like, I had this friend whose parents had gone to Harvard, and they knew exactly how the process worked and how to, I don't know, I just felt like such a disadvantage compared to that. And I guess I could have pursued tennis more with the Ivy League, but I, for some reason, I just didn't have a strong motivation to go there relative to other schools, such as like Duke or Stanford. And I had also considered UNC because my dad had gone there and they have a good tennis team as well.
So were there study habits or things you did to stay organized in high school that helped make you more marketable as a college player?
I'm sure I kept like a schedule, but I just tried to keep very detailed like notes and notebooks, and I maintained that in college. I think I told you how in one of my classes, they didn't think I could score that high on the test. And so I had to like produce the note cards I had written and show how detailed they were to show that I did in fact know all of that knowledge. Because I think what's hard with being an athlete is that sometimes you're underestimated academically, or they have certain stereotypes about how you may not be able to do the work or may not be willing to do the work. And so I felt like I was always trying to prove myself. I mean, that could be a common theme too, where like in sports, if someone underestimates you, you try to prove them wrong and show that you're as good or better than them. And I kind of brought that mindset to academics as well.
I honestly think because kids have to put so much time into their sport, they probably have to, something has to give. And maybe academics isn't the thing that they emphasize as much. But are there lessons that you learned as just being a good student and striving to be the best in your class and get in Ivy League level institutions that you think would be applicable or relatable or helpful for people right now for their kids as they're pursuing trying to get into good colleges?
Yeah, I'd say that it's shifted over time. I think in the beginning, I was much more focused on like grit and persistence, like always finishing what you start. And I think you learn that as an athlete, like you're taught to like never give up and like keep trying. And I think over time, I've pivoted to be more focused on resilience, like the ability to start over and sometimes decide when is best to quit something and when is best to redirect your energies into something else. And so I feel like that you can learn that from sports, but it wasn't until later that I realized the importance of resilience and not simply persistence.
So what sorts of colleges recruited you, and what were you looking for in university besides going somewhere that was an elite type institution?
I think I received a lot from like the schools in the Southeastern Conference. I looked at Vanderbilt, and I guess the ones I really ended up focusing on, I don't know that I was explicitly recruited, but I think I did meet or know the coach at Duke. And that was, so I think I got in on my own, but then I wrote to him after. And then we had a family friend that knew Jay Billis, who's a big Duke alumni. And so I think he might have written a letter of support for me as well. And so he already knew about me. And like, I was still, even though I wasn't like at the level to get into Duke in terms of tennis, I was still like really good as a player. And so he was like happy for me to be on the team. And I think I had wanted also to go to Stanford, but then I didn't get in Stanford. So it was relatively easy to make the decision to go to Duke after that.
What were some things you thought about as you narrowed your college choice? And how did you go about that selection process?
I don't know that I had a lot of factors. It was mainly like, did they have a really good tennis program? And are they also really good academically? And then I think there's some schools, like I feel like with Duke, where they have other aspects too, where I thought it would be a good social experience or other opportunities I didn't know at the time. And then once I was at Duke, I realized other reasons why I liked it. But initially, it was relatively simple about just basically tennis and school related.
What makes like a smart person like you think that a school like Duke has more to offer than a school where your parents went at Alabama?
I think part of me wanted to broaden my horizons and explore other kind of geographies and cultures. Because I feel like I was somewhat limited growing up in Alabama in terms of like most of the people I knew were either like doctors or lawyers, like a certain narrow set of professions. And I wanted to more explore and see what else might be out there. And so, I don't know, I guess I just was like eager to set up an independent life and see if I could see what I could succeed in like a kind of a broader, different environment than my where I grew up.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, why did you choose to forego maybe getting a sports scholarship at other schools to go to Duke as a non-scholarship athlete?
Like, I didn't want to simply go to a college because they offered me a scholarship. I think I just had certain schools in mind that I wanted to go to. And it was, I mean, kind of from athletics, like that whatever it takes mentality, I was kind of willing to do whatever it took to go to those schools. And so I think it was at a certain point, I decided I really wanted to go to Duke, but then it wasn't possible for me to get a scholarship, but I didn't let that become an obstacle. I just like figured out another way to continue to pursue the goals I had in mind.
Is there anything you learned in the athletic recruiting process that could be helpful for other young players and their families to know to give themselves the best chance to earn a sports scholarship?
I guess it just depends on what your goals are. Like, if you want to just simply obtain any scholarship, then it would seem like you would want to try to cast your net wide and talk to a lot of different coaches and like be open to a variety of different schools. But if you're set on like certain schools, then you might have to be willing to make more sacrifices, like possibly take less money or pay more or have other things that can compensate for athletics to try to get in academically. Because you can't always guarantee that they will use one of their spots on you. Because I think sometimes there's like a separate admissions process for student athletes. But I think for me at Duke, I went through the normal admissions process. But even with that, I think having something besides school where I was this competitive tennis player really gave me a leg up in terms of getting in.
Walk us through your first year at Duke when you were just getting acclimated to the academic rigor and just like being on campus and away from home and that adjustment. And while you're trying to play tennis at a highly competitive level.
Yeah, I think I found myself being open to things that I was initially closed off to. Like there was something called a focus program where you could take 3 or 4 classes around a certain theme. And so at first I was like, I'm never going to pursue that. Like, why would I do that program? But then for some reason I became open to it. And then I ended up doing it. It was called Athens in the Golden Age about ancient Greece. And so I think that was a really informative experience where you got to be in small classes with teachers, and it helped me adjust to college. And I think initially maybe just like having a roommate, because I was used to having my own room, that was an adjustment, like truly being on your own for the first time. I think it does help as an athlete because you have more structure than a normal student. Like you have a coach and teammates and like certain like a schedule for practice, lifting weights. So I think that facilitates the adjustment where you can have a more set schedule than if you're just a normal student. And then I was also trying to really challenge myself academically. Like I wanted, for some reason, I wanted to consider a minor in physics. I'm not sure exactly why, but I just thought that physics was like the hardest science I could do. And so I wanted to try to do that. And I think that was somewhat different from my teammates because sometimes the goal was more to just do the bare minimum academically. Like the athletes would compare notes about which courses were like the easiest to take or like the most friendly to athletes. And so there were like 2 science courses about the dynamic earth or biology of dinosaurs. And I just was never interested in that route. I was always trying to challenge myself. And I skipped the first semester of physics so I could take it in the spring. And so like it was self-inflicted challenges, but I ultimately did complete the minor like a few years later. And so that was something I was really proud of to be able to do. Cause I think most of those classes are males as well. And then I don't think any other athletes were in them.
You mentioned when you were at Duke, there was a class that when you felt like you were questioned in terms of like your ability to perform as like one of the top students. Tell us a little more details about how that went down.
Yeah, at that point, I had decided to major in psychology and focusing on neuroscience. And so this was actually one of the introductory psychology courses called developmental psychology. And I had 2 of my teammates in there as well. But it was funny that he didn't question them in their score, but I got a 97 on the test and he thought my answers were too detailed and that I must have cheated somehow. And so like the only thing I could think to do was to bring these note cards where I like wrote front and back on all these different concepts. And he was like, I had to apologize when he saw my note cards. But I was in somewhat used to being doubted because I felt like whenever I would enter a class, I had to worry about, do they expect me to be the worst student in the class simply because I'm an athlete? Because often you have to wear your tennis clothes to class. And so they can clearly tell that you're an athlete and you're not like a normal student.
So you end up having to overcome this inherent bias that that maybe athletes weren't taking school as seriously. And in the case of your own team, you saw that was the case at times.
Yeah.
How did you over time disabuse people of that notion? What were the kinds of things that you did? Were you able to build those similar types of mentorship relationships like you did in high school? What other things did you do?
Yeah, I think to some extent, like I wanted the results to speak for themselves. So if I could study hard and get a good grade on a test, that would show that I could do the work. And then I think similar to high school, because we would travel a lot, I did have to like, it forced me to be proactive with the professors and tell them when I was going to be out, and then sometimes meet with them individually to make up what I had missed. And in some ways, that was an opportunity because I got to know them better that way. And then a lot of them did become my mentors and champions and then helped me get other types of scholarships or later graduate school. And yeah, and then I guess like in high school, I just tried to study really hard and be organized and try to study all along as opposed to not just leave it to the last minute right before the test. And again, just having a growth mindset, like, you know, there are definitely times in certain classes where I had like a C on the first test or like in math or physics. And, you know, it wasn't what like my mom was used to seeing in high school, but like, I didn't panic. I just said, I can do this. I just have to keep trying, keep learning. And I was like really satisfied when like by the end, I would like make an A in that same class. And so just because you do poorly initially doesn't mean you can eventually do well in the topic.
Totally gets back to what you were saying about resilience and like having faced those adversities in other parts of your life. And a lot of times through sports that taught you that you could persist and continue to kind of make improvements and get what you wanted in the end.
Exactly. It's interesting because, you know, just because you persist in tennis, it doesn't always mean that will work in school. But there was something about knowing that I had overcome challenges in the past that I could in the future, even if it was like a different domain.
You mentioned that there was a structure to tennis that helped maybe when you first started at Duke and in some ways kept you better organized or better disciplined or whatever, because you only had so many hours presumably to study. Can you describe what the commitment was like for you in terms of playing a college sport and the physical and mental toll it might have taken as well?
Yeah, I think the practice time was relatively similar to high school. It was usually like 2 or 3 hours a day, but then we had additional like weightlifting 2 or 3 times a week and then strength and conditioning as well. So that was probably more than I did in high school. And then usually the matches would be on the weekends or sometimes in the spring, they'd be every few days. I think sometimes though, what was hard is if you're not playing, you still have to do all the same practice and conditioning. And even during the matches, you have to watch and you can't, like they wouldn't let me do homework during the matches. But like, I think I did work hard that first year. And then by my sophomore year, I was playing. I was like the number 3 doubles and I was like number 6 singles and ended up like contributing in a major way to the team. Like I remember there was one match against Georgia Tech and it was coming down to my match and to win. And I ended up winning like 6-4 in the third. And so we beat them and they were like number 1 in the ACC at the time. So I guess it was somewhat similar in that I started out maybe the coach doubting me, but then I feel like through my hard work, I proved over time that I could, play on the team at the same level as the others.
Do you think there's anything that you would have done differently now that you know you were going to end up playing as highly as you played or be such a contributor?
As with high school, I wasn't ever willing to fully commit to tennis where that was like my top priority. So I maybe could have done that, but I think I was just always hesitant to fully do that and make sacrifices to school.
When you say you didn't maybe put as much into tennis as you did academics or you never fully committed, what does that mean? Don't you still have to go to practices, do the training, do all of the things? Like you couldn't sit at matches and do your homework. Like where could you cut a corner?
I mean, I guess in theory, you could be playing tennis all day long. Like, I mean, I think I did the minimum requirements of like the scheduled practice sessions, but like, I don't know, maybe I could have scheduled more individual lessons or like I could have played 5 hours a day instead of 2 or something. So I think I just was never willing to fully just put all my eggs in the tennis basket because of that.
Looking back as a young student and looking back on your high school career, having reached one of the top slots in the country, a top 10 ranked player as a 14 and under, is there anything you feel like that you learned from that experience that has stuck with you today in the pursuits that you have?
I think sometimes just be open to what you can achieve, even if you don't really know what it is at the outset. Because I think growing up in Alabama, I didn't know that I could eventually do well in terms of the South or the nation? Because initially it was just like, I wanted to be number one in Alabama. And then I was like, oh, but it's going to be so hard to ever be like top five in the South. And then I achieved that one time. And then it was like, can I ever be like, you know, top in the nation? And then I achieved that. And so it was, I sometimes surprise myself in terms of what I can achieve. Because I think often in athletics, we do talk about goal setting. But sometimes if you set your goals too low, that can also be limiting. So just basically trying to focus on working hard and improving, but also be open to where that might take you, both in athletics, but also in other opportunities.
How did the sport align with your academic priorities, being as committed to academics as you were?
I don't know that it did align. It was always hard to balance the two. And I think I was able to do it my first 3 years. But basically, by my spring of senior year, there started to be a conflict where I was becoming very involved in service and considering. One of my teachers taught this class called Durham Through Literacy Lens, and she had been to Vietnam several times. And so by talking to her, I was just interested in kind of the course she was developing there. And we started to plan this feasibility study to go to Vietnam that summer to see what type of program we could develop. And it got to the point where I had set up a meeting with the provost, who's the, kind of the second in command at the university under the president, to discuss this, and then, or I could go to this trip away in Florida with my tennis team. And it got to the point where I couldn't do both. And so I made this like very difficult decision to quit the team at that time so I could go to this meeting. And that was, and I wrote about that in one of my leadership classes that spring, about that was like a really, probably the defining moment of my life at that point, because I played tennis since age 5 and it was so important to me. And also it was just so ingrained in me not to quit anything. And so that was the first time where I felt like I truly couldn't balance it and I had to choose one or the other. But I still didn't lose what tennis taught me, because in the program I eventually developed called Coach for College, I did try to think about all the things I learned from sports and incorporated that into the curriculum and into the marketing for the student athletes from different colleges that ultimately participated.
So let's talk a little bit more about Coach for College. It grew out of not just this class, but your thinking about how student athletes don't often have these other opportunities. So it's become a year-round commitment. A lot of student athletes stay on campus in the summers to get extra classes and sort of get ahead. They're training year-round. They don't have opportunities to do things like study abroad. How did that factor into your thinking about creating this program?
Yeah, I think when I was a student, I was fortunate that I was able to get involved in different service programs. Like, that was a big focus at Duke in terms of like service learning classes and like applying what you're learning to benefit others. And so I could see the benefit of that, but I could also see that a lot of the teammates I had or my other athlete friends weren't always doing that. And then with study abroad, it's more of like a time commitment where it's often 8 to 10 weeks. And there was also a new program that was launched called Duke Engage, but again, it was still 8 to 10 weeks. And so part of the pitch I made was that's too long for many athletes and they're missing out on like these key experiences that other students are getting. And so one of the changes I made was like, what if you offered a 3-week program instead? And then what if you also designed it around student athletes' strengths? Because they are great at inspiring youth and being leaders and talking about their life experiences. And so I developed a curriculum about that had like sports classes, academics classes, and life skills classes. And the academics classes taught subjects like biology, physics, and math, but using sports metaphors and examples to try to make it more engaging and understandable for the students. And then because I had gone to Vietnam that summer with my teacher, I had seen that as a real opportunity for a program like this. You know, also just the symbolism of U.S.-Vietnam relations. I thought it'd be great to have a program where it's more about the cultures collaborating with each other. And so that's how it started, is after I came back that summer, one of the ideas was this Coach for College program. I kind of wrote a proposal and brought it back to the provost. And he ultimately decided to give me funding to start the program that summer. And also I applied for this State Department grant because they sponsor international sports programs. And so Duke helped with that cost sharing too. And then it also became a way of getting Duke and UNC to collaborate. And so they ended up sending 8 athletes that first year as well. So it was like a great example of how 2 universities who are ordinarily rivals athletically can ultimately collaborate for the benefit of student athletes.
Very cool. So obviously it's grown quite a bit from there. What made you think you could create a program that athletes would actually be interested in and available to participate in, and that you could make that work?
I think I was just really interested in trying something new, because my whole childhood had been dominated by tennis. And so I was interested in, like, could I do something else, such as social entrepreneurship? And so I liked the challenge of trying to start something new. I liked being creative. I didn't really like the fundraising as much, but I saw that as something that's necessary. And it was just very motivating to me. And I just lever, like, when I'm very motivated about something, I can just really pursue it for hours on end. And I just wanted other student athletes to have the same experiences that I had had to some degree. And I just feel like they could really benefit from that. And I like the idea of not only Duke and UNC, but, like, involving other types of colleges too. So we then expanded to other ACC schools. And then I think also we got up to, like, 35 or 40 colleges that were sending students.
Tell us about where the program is now and, like, what you've done with it through really the lens of the other academic research you've done, even beyond your undergraduate research.
Yeah, that was one of the things too, is while I was directing the program, I also went to graduate school at the same time. So again, trying to balance different things. And so I started a doctoral program in education, and then I got a Rhodes Scholarship to Oxford for 2 years, where I studied international comparative education and an MBA the second year. And then came back and finished my doctoral program. And the cool thing about both is that I was able to focus my thesis on Coach for College. So when I went to Oxford, I focused on how was it affecting the dropout rate for the students. And then when I was doing my doctoral dissertation, I did a randomized trial of the program, where you assign some students to do it and some not, and you compare their outcomes. And I saw it increase their goal setting, their motivation, their GPA, especially for the lowest performing students. So it was cool that I got to integrate what I was doing as an entrepreneur and nonprofit director also with rigorous academic research. And so it's still going on. It's just that basically after 7 or 8 years, I just decided to focus more on research instead of directing the program.
What an incredible story of finding something that you were really interested in and pursuing it, not just on the side as a student, but using it to kind of help propel your academic career and use the research that you gain from that to write theses and do papers and study, like, development of this program and its impact on a vulnerable population. So kudos to you for that. It's really cool.
Thanks. But that also was another lesson I learned, because I think initially one of my role models was Wendy Kopp, and I wanted to basically do what she did for Teach for America. But I guess I realized that, like, sometimes you can do something for 7 or 8 years, and that's still, like, a good accomplishment, but it doesn't mean you can't pivot and do something else.
You were very modest in the way you described this, but you could have dropped a lot of prestigious institutions in this conversation. You went to Duke, you went to Harvard, you went to Oxford on a Rhodes Scholarship, which is, like, we're talking about narrowing and narrowing and narrowing the pool of elite academic students that you kind of are exposed to in each of those places. And then you end up at Stanford, which you didn't get into as an undergrad, but you ended up landing at as a graduate student. Is that where you got your PhD? Or
I got it at Harvard, but I also didn't get it at Harvard as an undergraduate either.
Okay. So that's another lesson in, I guess, persistence and resilience, is if you don't once get it, maybe you can come back and do it again.
Yeah. And the same thing with the Rhodes Scholarship. My mom somehow knew about it. So she did tell me when I was a teenager about it. So it was always something I aspired to, because I really like the values it incorporates in terms of academics, leadership, service. When I went through an internal Duke process, I was applying for something called the Truman. And they said something like, we want people that look great on paper, but also interview well or something. They seemed to doubt that I could actually do it. And then the final round where they interview you, but I didn't get selected. And then I applied again the next year. And that's the year where I had done Coach for College and had these additional mentor relationships. And I did get selected that year. Some of it is luck, but it also just shows that you have to keep trying, even if you don't always get selected the first time.
And it wasn't just about scores or studying hard and being the best student and getting the best grades. It was clearly about other things that you were doing that went beyond just those accolades. It speaks also to your ability to kind of just probably network with people and learn about what are the ways that you can, if you persist, get what you end up wanting.
Yeah. And I think it was just fortunate that I went to Duke in particular, because I felt like the leadership was much more accessible. You know, even the building where their offices are housed are, like, it's right on the central campus. And so I feel like that helped me feel like I could write to the provost or the president about my idea, pitch it, And then to have them support it was, that was a major factor. And I feel like me getting the scholarship and then other things I went on to do.
Having learned all you have about higher education as both student and like in leadership positions, what would you suggest to young students and to their families about their process of thinking about where they want to go to school and the things that are important to know?
I think you have to just consider like what factors are most important to you, because there's so many things you can get out of a college experience, whether it be academics or social experiences or service or internships, and like try to think about which colleges are the best fit for that. It's hard to know on the front end. Like you might think this college is the only one I want to go to, but in reality, a lot of colleges can offer a good experience. So then even if you don't get into your first choice, like how can you continue to like make the best of that experience and still like pursue the ultimate goals that you had? Because it's, college is more of a way station for other goals that you're trying to pursue. So like nothing is really the end, even if you don't get into your first choice college or, you know, your first choice major. Like I feel like you can always figure out ways to still pursue what you want to do.
And if you're like Parker Goya, and if you keep sort of the theme in mind of like, never doubt me, that helps too.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have doubt, but I try to be humble in terms of like, I focus on all the things I haven't done yet or haven't learned yet. And so that keeps me in that learning mindset where I try not to dwell on what I've accomplished, but think about what more can I continue to improve upon? And it's really about progress. It's not necessarily about, because you can't control achieving a certain goal necessarily, but you can't control like how much you can try to progress and improve towards it.
Speaking of progress, what's in front of you now? What's keeping you excited, and what's ahead for you?
So as I mentioned, I did a postdoc in psychology at Stanford for a few years. That was another reinvention where my background was more in education and statistics. So I kind of brought what I had learned there to these projects in social psychology. And so I contributed to a lot of different research papers. And then from there, I decided to work with the College Board as a policy research scientist, which is cool because they have data from all the students in the whole country in terms of like their census tracts or their level of opportunity and challenge, their SAT scores. And so that allows me to leverage my statistics skills that I've developed at a national level. And so that's always something that's been important to me, is to try to help thousands to millions of students, especially in education.
Where do you see yourself in 5-10 years, Parker?
I guess for the time being, you know, doing research like I'm doing at the College Board in education and psychology. I guess on the weekends, I'm also still doing the work with the psychologists at Stanford with other types of papers. I think hopefully I want to write a book one day, either about research or about some of my life experiences with Coach for College. So that's one of my goals I'm looking forward to.
I'd read that book. That would be great. Thank you. And thank you so much for sharing such an interesting and different perspective with us today. It's a pleasure to reconnect with you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's going to do it for this time. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss any episodes. And if you know someone who could benefit from listening to the show, please send them a link to this episode. See you next time.